Well, hey Dylan, I just wanted to welcome to the show, and I appreciate you sharing your afternoon with us to talk about yourself. And I'd love for you to go ahead and share your backstory for our audience and listeners.
All right. Well, thanks for having me, Ben. I really appreciate it. Yeah, my name's Dylan Retzik. I live on the central coast of California. I'm a math professor at the university here and lifelong athlete. I'm a AU2 as far as climbing is concerned, missing left arm sort of below the elbow. And my story coming to climbing is maybe not standard as far as your guests go. I'm definitely the oldest dude on Team USA, at least in my category, and I'm up there for sure, overall. 50 years old, only been climbing for maybe 8 years recreationally, and then just a year and a half, trying harder and a little more seriously. Yeah, I was born in Spain, traveled around with my mom, lived in Mexico for a bit, grew up in Southern California, and then actually went to school here in San Luis Obispo. And after doing graduate school, came back, and now I'm a professor here. Got a wife, two kids, a dog who may bark at any moment in the middle of this, and pretty standard family life, work, family, training, balance kind of life. So that's me. The climbing kind of came to me in an unusual way. Mo Beck was giving a talk. She was on her Nat Geo tour, her speaking tour, where she was talking about an ascent she made in the Arctic Circle with Jim Ewing. On the Lotus Flower Tower. And her tour came through my town. Our town is uniquely situated. It's about halfway between LA and San Francisco. So it's a small town. It's not a place you would necessarily go to specifically to go to that place. But if you were on a tour, then perhaps you would pass through here. And we really do have a really nice venue, a performing arts center here. And so we get speakers and bands of a caliber that we really are not entitled to, being such a small town. And Mo is an example. So yeah, her tour came through here, and I saw it was coming, and I was going for sure. And I thought, well, I'll just reach out. So Ben, this is being the old guy. You may not be surprised to hear this is my. This is my very first moment even interacting with a thing like Instagram. I think to myself, how do I contact Mo Beck? So I get Instagram on my phone, and then my very first order of business is, well, I'll send a message to Mo Beck. And I kind of figured that Mo wouldn't respond or would be too busy or wouldn't see it or whatever. And the message was basically, hey, you're coming through my town. Can't wait to go to your show. And if you want to train while you're in town, I'd love to hang out. You know, we have something in common, and it'd be fun to go climbing together. Hit send, figure, ah, there's no chance. There's no chance someone as famous as Mo Beck is going to respond to this. And Mo responded, and she was just sort of characteristically enthusiastic and open and down to earth. And so we did, in fact, go for a climb at my gym, and I went to her show. And when we were climbing at the gym, she suggested, you know, hey, you could try out at nationals. And I kind of laughed it off. What are you talking about nationals? I'm just some old math professor who climbs on the weekends. What do you mean nationals? And you know, she explained to me that there's a lot of momentum behind paraclimbing, and that the opportunities were sort of real and existed out there. And I thought, you know, maybe that was just sort of polite encouragement or whatever. And I kind of shrugged it off, and so finished our session, and then saw her show and kind of thought that might be it. But then she kind of kept bugging me a little bit. And I started thinking about it a little more seriously, and I thought, well, okay, if Mo says so, why not? And so I went to Nationals last year, 2024, in DC, and tried out. And Mo was sort of bragging about being right, but it was in kind of a funny way. Like she goes, I told you you'd make finals. What she didn't say was everybody made finals, because there are only four people competing in my category. So all four of us made finals. Plus, one of the people competing in my category was Brian Zarzuela, who he just took a gold medal at the most recent World Cup in Arco last weekend. And so he was automatically on the team already. And so the team was Brian plus three, not top three. And so there I was, finished dead last, fourth, call it whatever you want. And I find out somehow I'm on the national team by finishing fourth out of four at nationals. And so what that meant was I got to participate in the World Cups in Salt Lake City and in Innsbruck, Austria, in the summer, and was slated to participate in Arco also. And then I had to scrub that for family stuff going on around here. Real life kind of took a bite out of that one. But that's the story. See? I told you. You can, hey, relax. Shh. Anyway, that's the story of how I came to be talking to you today. And I think, you know, maybe one lesson there is, you know, it's never too late, and you never know kind of what's gonna come your way. And I visited amazing places this summer, and I've met so many awesome people, and the vibe at these comps is just the best. And I, you know, I'm super motivated in this new direction, and training hard, trying hard, ready to keep it going. Looking forward to Nationals next year, 2025, and see what comes. So that's the story.
No, that's awesome. I love that story. And, you know, there's a lot to pick from there. And the one thing I definitely want to highlight too is how you just, you know, were just went out and messaged her on social media. And it just shows like the connection we can make across this platform, you know, because that's how I got you. That's how I've gotten most of my guests is through Instagramming and DMs and stuff like that. So I think that's what's really cool that we can do that now with this connection that we have. And then, like you said, people are willing. And I think that speaks to the climbing community because I've noticed that, like, it's very small. And then you guys are even in a smaller category of that climbing community, right?
Totally.
And she's like, yeah, let's do it. It was no second hesitation. She's like, yeah, let's climb. And then she pulled, you know, old switcheroo on you. Now she's got you, you know, getting into the adaptive climbing. And you mentioned that you climb on the weekends and kind of were just doing that, you know, for fun and stuff like that. But I'm kind of curious, you know, now that you went to that first competition, could you kind of elaborate on like what that was like, your first experience going to your first competition? And then could you kind of go into maybe how you're getting prepared for next year? Because you said you're kind of motivated and ready to go. So I'm kind of curious on that front as well.
Those are really good questions. So, I was just sort of like a climbing dad. It was my kids, you know, who kind of got into climbing at the local gym here. That gym is its own story. Absolutely homespun, local, grassroots gym. It was born in a RV storage unit, you know, that you can rent storage units to store your RV. And so they totally illegally created like this underground gym in an RV storage unit. And then that slowly, you know, made its way into sort of a little more legit industrial complex unit. And then finally now it looks like a commercial climbing gym. It's a great success story in its own right. So it was the kids. We, you know, our family and some friends, we just figured out the kids, what a great activity. And they were always on boulders and scrambling around, you know, when we would go camping or on hikes or whatever. And so it just seemed like a great thing for the kids, and it really has been. So it started out just taking the kids on the weekends. And then, you know, when I kind of tried to flip the switch, there wasn't all that much time between when Mo convinced me, hey, you should try this in DC, and the actual comp in DC. But as soon as I sort of committed in my mind to, oh, all right, I'm going to try this, then it went from climbing on the weekends to training, climbing regularly, trying to learn. And the great news about that is my son is a really good climber. He aspires to sort of elite national level, and he's not there yet, but he's very good. And so he knows a lot about training and technique. And so he was kind of my first coach. You know, I started looking at him less as the kid I take to the gym on the weekends and more as this great resource, like, hey man, get me ready for DC, can you please? So started training really regularly, and that first comp was super fun. I feel like one of the great blessings in my life is my friend group and my family. And I think I had the biggest rail of anybody there. I think I had 14 people there, and these are people from across the country that all showed up in DC, my first comp, to cheer me on. So it was super fun. The routes, I had never climbed on routes that were set for me. All my training is on just regular old routes in a regular climbing gym set for two-handed climbers, you know, which is fun in its own right and requires a lot of problem solving and workarounds. And I think it's very healthy, but also to get on a route that was set with me in mind, where failure on the route couldn't be ascribed to, oh, well, sure, if you had two hands, failure just meant you couldn't do the move. And that was a really refreshing feeling to have on a route. So the format at Nationals was, there were three qualifying routes, and you got a few chances, maybe three chances on each, to get as high as you could. And it was just so fun. And my friends and family were there, and they were hooping and hollering. And we found out, you know, that I, quote, made finals. We went out and celebrated that on Saturday, but not too hard, because I had to get up in the morning and try hard again. And I met, you know, my competitors there. Everybody was super friendly, really supportive, you know, kind of to the new guy on the block. So I was sort of hooked at that point. Like the whole competition scene was really, really, positive and motivating. And so then since then, I've just been training really hard. I mean, I think I train, I would say 6 days a week. There's a rest day in there. 6 days a week, it's probably 4 to 5 days involve actual climbing, but lots of other days involve training sort of adjacent to climbing, off-wall stuff. Lots of core, lots of legs. I'm really tall and skinny, and so I need a little meat on my bones on the lower body, so I can like sort of pop off of holds and get a little more explosiveness. So there's a lot of training in that direction, trying to get better at that. It sort of infiltrated every area of my life. You know, I think about it like when I'm planning dinner, I think about it when I'm eating breakfast. I am really, really motivated right now, and feels good to have that motivation and to have the opportunity to sort of carry it out. It's busy, but it's well worth it. And I'm really looking forward. I will be a much different and much stronger climber at Nationals 25 than I was at Nationals 24. I may still finish fourth of four or 10th of 10 or whatever it is next year, but I personally will be a very different climber, and I'm looking forward to that too.
Yeah, and I think what sticks out kind of where you ended was, you know, you said whether it's 4-4 or 10-10, it doesn't matter where you place, it's, you know, you're going to be happy with your performance. And that's something that I've seen with all the climbers, including myself, is that internal validation we get from our performance, right? Because we just want to be better than we were last time. You know, kind of appreciate you really saying that, because I think that a lot of people could start to maybe focus on that versus the outside performance. Like, competition's great, but that internal like happiness and okay, I was better than last time, that's a good thing to go with. But another thing that stuck out that I love talking about, just because the climbing community is so accepting and they're not really judgmental. Like, everybody kind of just is a fan of everybody. Everybody's your, basically your support system. You know, they're like your biggest fan and they're everybody's friends. And could you describe what it was like going to that competition and then just experiencing that for the first time? Like, I know, you know, you have your community within the gym that people are going to find, but then being in like involved in the adaptive community at an adaptive climbing event, you know, what was that like?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, I'll say this first. I've been an athlete my entire life, and I am obscenely competitive. So my posture going in, actually, you know, on the plane ride across the country and in the car on the way to qualification day, when I walked through the door at first, I was walking through the door as I might walk into a gym for pickup basketball, not so much like with a chip on my shoulder, but like, hey, there's a new guy in the gym, you know, watch out everybody. Like, I was kind of in like that aggressive, competitive posture going through the door. And so when it was clear to me, and it didn't take long, when it was clear to me that this type of competitiveness was a different thing than I was used to, because it's super competitive. Everybody is trying as hard as they can and wants to succeed. But as you said, it comes with this sort of family vibe. And not only does each person want to succeed for themselves, but they kind of want the whole thing to succeed. They want paraclimbing to succeed. They want everyone to climb at their best, and they want us to push one another to climb better and better and better. And that vibe was honestly kind of new to me, because in most sports, that's just not how it is. In a basketball game, nobody on the other team's clapping when you hit a three. Never. That's ridiculous. This is a ridiculous idea. If anything, they're trying to bring you down. They're trying to get in your head. They're trying to kind of gain an upper hand in some way. So it was actually new to me, and it was refreshing. And it kind of, when the aggressive side of competitiveness isn't at the forefront, it kind of makes space for some other kind of competitiveness, which I think is healthy and like nourishing in some way, and sort of results in everybody getting better and pushing harder. So I noticed that right away. I was sort of in my old sports competitive mode when I came through the door, and I came through the door and I was like, oh, okay. And I was like kind of trying to pick up on, you know, sort of what our scene was like. The other thing I noticed, and my crew who came noticed this also, that's that 3 hours on qualification day, that was the most time I had ever spent around people who look like me. My whole life, 50 years, a half a century, like on the daily, you just kind of go around about your business. And really, honestly, I'm pretty sure none of us really thinks about the difference between us and everyone else at the grocery store, or the difference between us and everyone else at the bank, or everyone else at the gym where we train, or whatever. We don't think about that. But then in reverse, when you're around a bunch of people that do look like you, you really think about it and you're like, oh, okay, there's this group. There's this group I was totally unaware of. And it kind of normalized it. My kids even, like, by the end of that weekend, they felt like, when we went back to the airport, say, to come home, they felt like there weren't enough wheelchairs at the airport, or there weren't enough one-handed people, or people with prosthetic legs or whatever. Like, they had spent an entire weekend in that group, and then they went out back into the regular world and they were like, oh, where is everybody? So I think it was healthy in that way too, you know, just to know that none of us, no matter what our differences might be, you know, not really alone ever. You just got to find that pocket and find those people. So that was a secondary thing that I noticed. It was just nice being around other people who looked like me and climbed like me, well, better than me, but sort of like me. And it kind of, you know, it really opened my eyes to this whole new community. I had no idea. When I reached out to Mo, I thought she was the only other one-handed climber. I'm sure I thought that. And then I find out, no, that's not true. It's hundreds. Anyway, yeah, it was a great experience. That first comp, I think I had not so much nerves, but excitement. And the three routes, one was easy, one was medium, and one was kind of hard in the middle. So my first route, I got in line for the easy one, and I sent it. And that was really cool, because I came down and, like, my daughter ran up. She's like, Dad, you sent it. And it was just a really kind of sweet moment to top a route in a competition, in my first competition ever, where I don't even know where I stand relative to everyone else. And then did okay on the other routes too. But I remember that specifically, that very first route, like, they're like, okay, you're up, and on you go, and you just got to do it. And it was a really, really special moment. Yeah.
Yeah. I appreciate you, like, sharing that moment with us and telling us that story. That's awesome. Especially, like, hearing that your daughter ran up, got to hug you, and you sent your first climb. That's incredible to hear.
Yeah, it's cool.
Love hearing that.
Yeah. At that moment, I thought I was just going to flash everything and just destroy the day. And then, of course, the very next route, I kind of got put back in my humble place. But yeah, it was a great competition.
Yeah. The sport will do that, won't it? Put you back in your place when you think you're doing good.
Definitely. Yeah.
And you mentioned something that I think is very interesting that we could, like, explore a little bit, is you talk about your kids being immersed in that environment, right? With a lot of, you know, people living with adaptations, and then going home, they were more aware of, like, the lack of, you know, devices for people to help people with adaptations. And I think that's kind of interesting that we could talk about, because I think that's really one of the, it's at least part of this podcast, right? To bring awareness to things like that, to get you guys out on the spotlight, you know, not just sports, but to talk about other things. And so I'm kind of curious of, maybe what are some things that the able-bodied community, like myself, maybe doesn't understand, or maybe we could start to realize through conversations, right? So, like, you know, your kids knew there was a lack of stuff. What are some other things you think are important for us to know and like the able-bodied community?
Yeah, I think it's making opportunities. I think it's making space. People always eventually step into the space that's made. And I think, you know, my parents, when I was a kid, like, they just signed me up for Little League, say. No special meetings with the coach, no special meetings with the Little League committee or whatever. Just like, here you go, you're in Little League. And so I think My parents were maybe ahead of their time, and really, really wise in the way they try to make space for me. But I'm not sure everyone's like that. And I think it's much better today than it was when I was a kid, and probably way better when I was a kid than it was 100 years before that. But I think the key thing when we're all thinking about making that space is people are pretty similar. Even when you think they might not be, they're pretty similar. People have, by and large, the same hopes and fears and dreams and want to pursue those things as anyone would. And so making space for paraclimbing, making space, my family's super into basketball, and we're watching the WNBA playoffs right now. Like 20 years ago, there was no Women's Professional Basketball League in America anyway. And now, like watching these games, it's so fun and it's growing and it's got this momentum and the crowds are going crazy. And that's what I mean when I say people will fill the space. 30 years ago, there were plenty of little girls who wanted to play professional basketball, but just kind of shrugged and were like, but that's not a thing, so I guess I'll do something else. And now, it's like it's been here forever. It's like the most natural thing in the world. And I think the same thing can be said for, paraclimbing or just Paralympic sports in general, making that space. So make it possible for people to get into the gym. If there's stairs in your gym, make it possible to get into the gym. Don't think that some guy in a wheelchair has no interest in climbing. That's crazy talk. That guy has as much interest in climbing as any random person might have. And so I think just making the space, and realizing that when I'm like projecting some five, say, and you're projecting an 11, we're experiencing the same thing. We're having very, very similar experiences. And I think sort of just appreciating that naturally makes the space for those experiences. So it's nothing really overt, it's nothing super specific. I think it's just make space. And that space, people naturally gravitate to the spaces that are there. It's only when you shut it down that you shut people out. So just making the space.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to explain it, right? Like making the space, giving the opportunities, and like just saying, yeah, come on in, let's go. And then it comes down to people who are, because climbing gyms are popping up all over now, and it's going to be even more since the Paralympics is coming in 2028. So like just
So
keeping that in
fun.
mind, yeah, I know it's incredible. I can't wait just to, like you said, have those wheelchair ramps and things like that, just the access points available and to take that in the mind. And that's, yeah, we say climbing gyms, but that goes for anywhere, and granted, there are some, I guess you could say, building permits or building regulations in place or like that, but still, we could definitely make it more, especially together. And again, when it comes to the opportunities or the space, right? Like you said, women's basketball is growing, and then now the adaptive sports are growing. I think the social media, again, connecting us all and becoming more aware, I think is definitely one big route to go.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's good times for this. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's great and I love seeing it, And just kind of moving forward off of that, this is kind of a random fun question because I know we're about to run out of time, but you were talking before that you're a math professor. And so given the fact that you study math, I'm sure I just want to know, do you think that gives you an advantage when it comes to climbing?
It's a great question. I think I am very, very used to banging my head against a problem and it taking a long time or maybe never getting it. So I think I've built up that kind of stamina for try hard at something that could be an advantage. I am a bit of a bulldog on problems that kind of grab my attention. You know, I will just go project that forever, day after day after day after day after day. I think about it when I'm falling asleep. I wake up in the morning and it's the first thing in my mind. Like, it feels like trying to prove a theorem or working on a hard math problem. They feel similar to me. So yeah, I think in that sense, kind of the I'll call it spiritual stamina, to work on something hard and to not give up on something, I think is a nice asset for climbing. Not that others don't have it too, but I definitely feel trained in that because 99% of my math life is spent in confusion, frustration, and sort of just flailing away. And then every once in a while, you have those transcendent 1% moments, you know, where you really sort of figure out something deep, you understand something on a level that you hadn't before, and then that maybe no one has before. And those moments are really, really special, but they're like needles in a haystack, those moments. Most of the time, you're just grinding, just grinding. And so I'm used to that. And I think that's a characteristic of mine that has served me so far in climbing. Yeah. And they call them problems.
Right, I've got to
Boulder
say.
problems. I'm doing problems all day. Math problems, boulder problems. Yeah.
No wonder why your brain doesn't get a break at night.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's a good thing we sleep, man. Otherwise, be thinking about it 24 hours a day.
Awesome. Well, Dylan, thanks again for everything, and especially the explanation. I loved how you just really just said math coexists with climbing, like the problems and stuff like that. And I think that's the unique advantage of the climbing sport is just you get to sit in the problem, solve it, and work your way through it one step at a time, and that's pretty
Totally.
incredible.
Yeah.
And
Yeah, I
so,
totally agree.
you know, kind of ending here, I just want to make sure people can follow you on Instagram. I take it, you know, what's your Instagram handle or anything like that?
Oh, sure, yeah. Mo makes fun of my Instagram handle because I didn't really have very much foresight when I made it. Because remember, I only got Instagram to try to talk to Mo. In any case, it's 510 climb. And she suggests that that is beneath what my goals should be and a stupid thing to call yourself on Instagram, but whatever, it's too late, it's done. Yeah, 510 climb on Instagram. And I'm not prolific with the posting, but post fairly regularly and definitely like to keep everyone in the loop who's supporting me, you know, sort of far and wide about how the comps are going and how training's going. So yeah, I'm on there. Feel free to check it out.
Perfect. I look forward to watching your journey as you get ready for the World Cup next year. I can't wait to see some of your posts and just follow your journey. And then one day we'll see you in the Paralympics, maybe 2028.
Oh man, wouldn't that be something? Yeah. A guy can dream. Yeah. Well, thanks a lot for having me, Ben. I really appreciate it.